Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod, Robert Gibbs, and Mike Murphy.
Good evening, America. My name is Katie Britt, and I have the honor of serving the great people of Alabama. But tonight, I'll be auditioning for the part of Scary Mom. And I'll be performing an original monologue called This Country is Hell. You see, I'm not just a senator. I'm a wife, a mother, and the craziest bitch in the Target parking lot.
So there you have it, Mike Murphy, the great Scarlett Johansson, by the way, an alum of Junior High School 104, where I also attended several centuries earlier in New York City, sending up Katie Britt. Why does anybody, Mike, do these?
I know it's the worst gig in politics. You know, Marco Rubio, I think, sent Senator Britt a water bottle too, so to pass the Scarlet water bottle. It is. I worked on one of them for Christine Todd Whitman, and it is, and she did okay. We didn't do a lot of acting like Senator Britt did, but it's a no win deal.
Yeah, she was she. Now we have with us the great, the immortal Amy Walters.
Immortal.
Yeah. And she's going to do a little acting for
Amy
us
Walters.
Here. So,
yes,
yeah.
Immortal. She was on the VP list, Amy.
Yeah, I'm sure she still is on the VP list. That was a Trump message. The performance, obviously, not well received.
Human.
But the messaging was pretty much what you would hear from Donald Trump, right? The border is a mess. You're not safe. Women should be worried. Didn't Trump said something similar the next day, right? Something about in his rally about women who are in their homes are going to be attacked by
in their kitchens where they like to be.
You say she was delivering Trump's message. There's no doubt she was delivering Trump's message, but he's like a casting director.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, Christine Noem right now is getting her witchcraft book out to put a curse on Katie because there's a new brunette in town. The whole thing, you know, the sad part? She used to be chief of staff to Dick Shelby, who was a big player in the Senate, old cigar and martini Paul. And somehow she's gone to the Trump Lobotomy Academy and turned into this. Because people who know her knew her in politics, she's not an idiot. Yet now she plays one on TV.
Maybe she thought that's what it takes to get in the mix with him, but I would think the reaction to it probably is problematical for her.
Oh, yeah.
This is the big story today, and Murphy, you said when we were texting earlier that it's a big Washington nothing burger, and I think you may be right, but is this her hearing? Amy, have you been monitoring this? Robert Herr, the special counsel who said Biden was too much of an old doddering man to prosecute. You've been following the hearing today?
I have not been watching the hearing today. I had many other things on my plate, but I did check in on
You had some paint to dry. You had to keep an eye on.
Yeah, exactly. I have this other job that I have, but it seems to me.
Which is, by the way, is publisher of the Cook Report with Amy Walters.
Yes.
We should have mentioned at the beginning. If we planned this stuff out, we would have mentioned this at the beginning, but that's not how we roll here.
Indispensable Cook Report. But yes, this is the big story today, that now we have the transcript of what was paraphrased and then kind of re-paraphrased as Biden having mental competency stumbles. And you actually read the transcript, which I've read about half of and I fell asleep. Not so bad.
It's 125 pages. I doubt that anybody else will read it. But isn't this the issue, though, you guys, is any day that we are talking about Joe Biden and Joe Biden's deficiencies, whether it is his age, whether it is the crisis on the border, whether it is a spike in inflation, it's another day that the Biden campaign isn't talking about Donald Trump, and Donald Trump's not in the spotlight. And that, to me, all of these things are not helpful if you're the Biden campaign. It can't be about him.
Couldn't agree with you more that he needs this thing to be hard on Trump. And we'll get to that in a second, because that was obviously on his mind when he gave the State of the Union speech and everything he's done after. But watching that hearing, half of it was about that and half of it was about Trump and why his thing was different, and Democrats wailing on that indictment and reminding people of all the stuff that he did. So my feeling at the end of it is that everybody will end up who listens, and the people who listen are probably not the average voter and certainly not the swing voter, but they'll end up hearing what they want to hear and getting social media clips that they want to get. And for that reason, I agree with Brother Murphy, big Washington nothing burger.
Well, it's guys in suits yelling at each other when all the minds are made up. I mean, if you were fair-minded and looking at the facts, which is a very small fraction of the electorate these days, the transcript's kind of good for Biden. But I think, it'll be just lost in the morass. I think the State of the Union, though.
You're in Hollywood. Why don't you make a whole film out of the transcript?
Yeah, well, that'll be
a big winner.
Yeah, it'll make Oppenheimer seem fast.
I saw you grumbling about the Academy Awards. You could be up there on the platform next year.
You have set me up. Why can't they get In Memoriam right? They literally have like the ice capades going on in the foreground. We want to see and respect the people who've passed for their contribution. I want to see Alan Arkin. I don't want to see somebody in a purple suit in the foreground with 300 dancers. They ruined it. Not for the first time. How hard is it? And another thing. There you go. That's my rant.
The older you get, the more the more you pay attention to In Memoriam. And I can't help but draw the connection here.
Oh, I love In Memoriam because I'm a nut for actors
I
and
like
characters and Hollywood people. But I couldn't see it.
Did you say it? Was it the Grammys? The Grammys did it super well.
They did it really well. AMC did it okay. I tweeted that at @MurphyMike so you can see what a good one looks like.
Oh, wait a second. This is Hacks on Tap. I forgot. We better get back to what's going on in politics. Yeah,
politics, where the real acting is.
Jamie's like, what the hell am I
like,
doing
I think
here?
I don't agree to this. Remember that part of the intro.
But let's get to the State of the Union, speaking of acting, because I want to give Biden some props. I mean, on one hand, it was horrible that the State of the Union has now become, he's doing a union hall speech. We got bozos like, throwing spit. I mean, it just was disgusting if you step back and think about what it ought to be. But Biden didn't create that world. Trump did. And Biden's caught in it. And he decided, all right, time to engage. And he did what I think we've been talking about here for a long time. I'm going to give him props. Biden was Biden. And he engaged, and he slapped back a little bit, and he was on offense, and I think he dramatically exceeded expectations. So I'm going to give him a good grade.
He's finally listening to the podcast. We keep urging
right.
him. We give him good advice every week. Amy, to me, I don't know. None of these State of the Union speeches have like lasting impact, and they often don't have any impact on the overall numbers. But the one thing that Biden managed to do was quiet the panic, the panic, as witnessed by the fact that our friend Ezra Klein, who was calling for an open convention a week ago, wrote a tribute to Biden on Sunday. So after the State of the Union speech, or mostly
it
a
did.
Tribute.
But it's activist. You know who it was? As much aimed as the Ezra Kleins of the world as the county, the Dem county
right.
head in blah, blah,
yes.
blah county, right?
Yes, yes,
who
yes.
every day gets asked by his friends and family, what's going on with that Biden? Isn't he too old? Is Trump going to win? And then he says, hey, look at this.
Yeah. Right. Fighting Joe.
Look at this guy. He's fighting. He's going to fight back. So that's, I think, the donor class, obviously the elite class, yes, but also that rank and file local elected who has to get out there and stump for him.
And that's step one to turning it around.
They need something to grab onto. I've joked a lot about Biden performance anxiety, which is he performs and everybody who's rooting for him gets anxious. But in this case, one thing he certainly didn't have is performance anxiety. He is, and this is something people miss about this, there isn't a place in the world where Joe Biden isn't more comfortable than in that building where he spent 36 years jousting with Republicans on the Senate floor. So, he's comfortable there. The second thing that I think goes unremarked on or went on and remarked on. And maybe this just happened and it wasn't planned, but if it was planned, it was genius. You know, one of the problems for Biden is that he just he has spinal issues, and so he walks in a very stiff gait that makes him look older. He came into he had the longest entry in the history of any State of the Union speech, but no one saw him walking. You didn't see him walking in. You didn't see him walking out because he was stopping and talking to people along the way. Now, maybe that was just by accident, but it underscored something, which is you don't show him walking. It really helps.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. I agree. I wish they did that on the border, put him in a Jeep or something rather than that horrible walk. I was only disappointed on the walk in when Marjorie Taylor Greene lunged at him, and I was hoping she'd get tasered. That would have made my night. I don't know where the Secret Service was.
More likely that she was carrying a taser than anybody else.
You guys saw, too, I'm sure, David, you were on set and watching the feed, but they basically turned the lights out, and he was still there in the Capitol.
No, there was a guy turning the chairs upside down, sweeping up the floor, and he was still there.
Yeah, he
wouldn't leave.
Vacuuming.
They're looking at their watches. They finally said, "Sir, we really need to close."
Well, he felt like, you know, it's all about squelching the internal trouble, and so I think he felt like he had some lucky moments there. Now, I will give him one demerit.
I think he also likes it, Mike. I think he actually enjoys that. He is a garrulous old pal. He loves schmoozing with people.
And it feels authentic, and that helps him. And even though he's the malaprop king, I mean, Norm Crosby could take lessons from him on the mispronunciation. You could tell the brain was working just fine. But I'm going to give him a demerit, and I think you're going to agree.
Well, don't put me in a corner here. I'm not agreeing to anything up front, okay?
All right. Yeah, watch this. Oh, I'm Kreskin here. He's now going to agree. Watch this. They made the mistake they keep making. They went to the economy.
I know where you're going. Now I'm Kreskin.
You know, listen, America, you're wrong. I'm right. The economy's great. Got it? Yes. That's the way it is. Malarkey. And they overplay that hand, and it's like, it's bad, 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 and they did it again.
Let's play the new ad that they put out, which I thought was generally good, but we can continue this discussion after the ad.
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people. I led the country through the COVID crisis. Today, we have the strongest economy in the world. I passed a law that lowers prescription drug prices. Caps insulin at $35 a month for seniors. For 4 years, Donald Trump tried to pass an infrastructure law, and he failed. I got it done. Now we're rebuilding America. I passed the biggest law in history to combat climate change because our future depends on it. Donald Trump took away the freedom of women to choose. I'm determined to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again. Donald Trump believes the job of the president is to take care of Donald Trump. I believe the job of the president is to fight for you, the American people. And that's what I'm doing. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Can we do one more take?
Look, I'm very young, energetic, and handsome. What the hell am I doing this for?
Not bad. All over the place, all the usual things, but not bad.
First of all, they acknowledge the age as an issue, and you know, I think they did it well. I agree with you completely, and Amy, I'm interested in your cut on this. I've said how many times have we said you can't jawbone into people into feeling what they don't feel. This may well be the best economy in the world if you look at the statistics, because the whole world's dealt with inflation, and we're making a soft landing and all of that stuff after the pandemic, but people are very, very, very much impacted by prices and costs.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter that they have, right. And so the normal metrics that we use, job creation, GDP, those sorts of things sound great in economic terms. But if you're bringing in more money and not able to spend it on the stuff you want to spend it on because your rent costs more than it did 2 years ago.
Or your groceries.
And your groceries cost too much.
Same stuff, more dough.
It's the same idea of, you know, look, I this is where I think the very big challenge going forward for the Biden campaign is, to your point, you can't convince people of something that they don't feel. And that infrastructure and green new, whatever the green climate stuff that was in the Inflation Reduction Act, that's just not impacting people's lives in the same way that inflation is. To me, the most important line he had was the one at the end, yes, where I think that we'll hear that all the time.
He's fighting for himself. I'm fighting for
exactly.
You.
Yeah,
that was the key line. We've been talking about that here, motive. I was very happy to hear it.
Yes. Yeah. The best ads are the ones that people look at and say, yeah, well, that's true. And I think that's what people believe. That's what they trouble. I mean, we've said, Amy, for a long time here that Biden, you know, both these guys are old. They don't have much of a future, either of them. But the question is, who's fighting for your future and who's fighting for himself? And that, I think, is an equation that Biden can win. I agree with both you guys. The strongest part of the State of the Union, and the one that I am certain resonated most with people who are watching, were the sort of cost of living populist economic dimensions of that speech, fighting for lower drug costs, fighting for, you know, to deal with high housing costs, which is the other big issue that people are dealing with. But it will be more effective if he acknowledges the journey that we've been on, and this is a lingering problem that we have to conquer. And by the way, inflation went up today, so it doesn't look like it's sort of, first of all, it's a mistake to just assume that where it is today is the whole story, because it's cumulative and people are dealing.
It's where it lands in October in perception, what they're feeling.
But also, it might, you know, they're dealing with the accumulation of inflation over several years, so prices are much higher than they were.
Right.
A few years ago.
Do that. I wanted him to merge the two, which was, we're making progress, but we got a lot more work to do. We've done the hard work. We're coming out of it. The question is, who do you want doing the work? Me on your side or Trump on Trump's side?
You know, it's interesting because I was talking with somebody who's doing a lot of work with Latino voters, and this was on the progressive side, and said, you know, what we're hearing now is these voters, especially women, who are saying, look, I still think Republicans are the party of the rich. I still think that Joe Biden cares more about me, but Trump can deliver. And to me, that it's kind of looking at that idea of he's looking out for himself, I'm looking out for you. That voters already actually have baked that in, right? Yeah, he's looking out for himself, but somehow it could work for me.
Yeah, and that's what you have to peel
off.
That's
why the comparative is really important. Going after Trump on these things is really important. You know, it has to be done right, because people actually give Trump a lot more props. I mean, it's incredible, because when you, the guy left the country in shambles, but people sort of give him a pass, I guess, because
they remember
of the
a better economy. You know, it's pretty simple to them. How was I doing? I was doing better. That's why, even though they don't like Trump, he beats Biden on running the economy by 10, 15 points. But let me ask you.
But the reality is they weren't, except for inflation, which is a big issue.
Right.
They really weren't doing better. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, but then you're back to telling them you're wrong, you know, which is losing.
But weren't they also getting, they were getting a lot of stimulus checks in 2020 and early 2021. There was money coming into people's bank accounts. So that's the other thing that's different, right?
Yes,
on
that's
top
true.
Of the inflation.
Riddle me this, wise guests here and Brother Axelrod. They got a pretty good reset in State of the Union. They squelched the panic on their side. They show Biden vigorous and on the offense and comfortable. Why the stupid budget with the tax increases? Because in the new world, it is the suburban high-earning people who have become Democrats and the white working class people who become Trump Republicans. So why are they, why, if you make $400,000 a year, which I know sounds like a lot of money, but you're in the suburbs of a major city, you're leading Biden, and wham, now you get a tax increase. I don't know why he gives that hammer to the Repubs. I don't get this budget.
I will tell you that they've been working on this speech since November, and I think that they have tested every aspect of this. And the feeling that wealthy Americans and corporations get away with too much and got away with too much under Trump. That tax cut of Trump's is the most potent argument against him. The most potent argument. And so, I mean, I think they're playing to that. It bleeds into this cost of living argument. And I think that they're going to get those. I think they feel they're going to get those voters you're talking about on a number of other grounds.
Yeah. Like, look at all these suburban folks have been willing to shoulder progressive policies on spending for a long time now, spending in taxes for a long time, whether you're, you know, in suburban Chicago or suburban Philly or here in suburban DC. So I don't know that it has the same sort of impact that it once did. And, you know, I mean, for the last how many years has it been that Democrats have been calling for tax increases on the wealthiest, and the wealthiest counties in America keep voting for Democrats.
Right. Yeah, no, that is true, but I don't know. I smell a mistake. I just say it.
You're going back to that old Republican Party mindset again.
You don't get Republicans in the suburb by starting tax increase wars.
We got them, brother. They're becoming Democrats and independents.
Yeah, because of Trump. I don't know. I think it's a mistake. I'll just say it. I disagree. We'll see.
The other thing that I think was missing a little from the State of the Union, missing from that spot, I keep feeling, I think I've said it here, he is most effective when he is Joe from Scranton, not Joe from Washington. And I think a little bit more of a sense of connection with people, like if he had described what people have gone through, to what we've gone through
totally
together in the
this.
Last,
yep.
and talk about how people back in where he's from are dealing. What the things they're dealing with. I mean, so this is a big conflict for Biden. This is the sort of psychological conflict for him because he desperately wants a credit. He thinks he deserves it. He thinks he's earned it. He thinks he's done a good job. I don't disagree with him. But the fact is,
it's not the
it
pitch.
Is what it is. It is what
yeah,
it is.
It's
and
a
when
bad
you
pitch.
When you try and grasp for credit, it can really diminish.
Right. And somebody's got to straighten them out because they've been trying this horse shit for 9 months. And, you know, it is
well,
not
at least
helped.
They removed the word Bidenomics.
Well, yeah, that's their big finish in October and bring it back.
Okay, then let's take a break right here and we'll be right back. This podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. So, Murphy, you know, we've been introduced to a lot of fine products on this podcast, and people we take advantage of everything we can. And one of them is Naked Wines, which is something that I had never known about before this. And I got a chance to check it out. And it is fantastic because it solves the problem that we have, that we always have. You walk into a wine store and you look around and it's like, how the hell do I find the one I want?
Right, particularly when you're naked. I mean, that's always been the problem. I'm into wine.
Nobody will
like
help you.
Around
I mean,
naked.
I'm standing there and I'm asking for
right.
help.
Right. No, the cops are running in. Kids are screaming. It's not a wine buying
well,
experience.
Well, the naked
that you
wine
have.
Solves this problem because they deliver it right to your home, so you don't have to get dressed.
No, it's really, really smart because in the wine business, little inside secret here, when you buy wine today, most of your money goes to things like fancy packaging, big budget marketing campaigns, and of course, taxes. That's crazy. Plus, even after all that, you don't really know if you like the wine until you've guzzled the bottle. So, our sponsor, Naked Wines, has solved that problem. It's a subscription service that seamlessly connects you to the finest independent winemakers on the planet. So you get a box of the market's best quality wines, however often you'd like, for a fraction of the price you'd normally pay in stores.
How do you do it? Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers, allowing for vineyard to your door delivery at up to, now listen to this, 60% off what you would pay
wow.
in the store. Yeah. By cutting out the traditional retail middlemen costs
yeah,
and markups.
Who needs those guys?
Don't need them. Winemakers can pass those savings on to you without skimping on quality. As a result, you'll get exclusive access to hundreds of top quality award-winning wines at a huge savings, making Naked Wines perfect for any type of wine drinker. And you know what? I know this now because I told them what I like. No, don't make fun of me, but I happen to...
Old Panther sweat. I've seen it there. I always borrow a bottle to run my lawnmower, but you know your wine.
I took their quiz, And Susan took, my wife took the quiz, and a box showed up with bottles for me of rosé, for with her of I think Chablis or Chardonnay. And I'll tell you something, it was damn good. It was damn good.
They put an assortment together, so yes, both you and your spouse are happy. You can have your left-wing Democrat rosé, and she can have the real stuff. It really is a cool way to buy wine. Naked Wines has been around for over 10 years. People like this, and they fund over 90 independent winemakers, which is great. You're not always getting the big corporate stuff that, you know, loads up the supermarket. There are no commitments or membership fees, so you can enjoy Naked Wines hassle-free.
So head to nakedwines.com/hacks and click enter voucher in the top right when you get to the website, and put in hacks for both the code and password to get 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off and less than $7 a bottle. But it's not going to taste like that, folks. That's nakedwines.com/hacks and use the code and password hacks and grab 6 bottles for just $39.99.
One last time, that's nakedwines.com/hacks. Code and password hacks for $100 off your first 6 bottles, or as we like to call it, breakfast.
But I agree with Amy. I thought the whole end of the speech was very strong, and I didn't pull clips because we're days after the thing now. But I thought that his close of that spot and the close of the speech was strong, in which he talked about fighting for their future and Trump fighting for himself. And I think that's a meta theme that they need to develop. They're also, you know, they sent him out on the road. I want to talk about sort of the techniques of using him moving forward. They sent him out on the road, as they should after the State of the Union. They released a budget that amplified a lot of the themes of the speech. These speeches that he's making are like 20 minutes long. You know, he's not doing multiple events a day. Someone reminded me that when in 2000, George W. Bush, and you'll remember this, Mike, because you were involved in that campaign, you know, they didn't do a whole lot of events, and they went out and he had a stump speech, and then he'd do a little insert to create news, and it worked for him.
You don't have to kill the candidate in the road with multiple speeches. You just increase your odds of trouble.
Yes.
Just feed the news cycle pictures and a message.
And in this case, look, he is old. And he's going to make more mistakes if you overdo trying to prove that he can do it. Just go out there.
And the big bear trap is out there waiting for a mistake. Aha! He can't remember what day it is.
Yeah. By the way, we should just play. This is the ad that the Trump campaign.
Yeah. This is the video, was Biden falling down the stairs to Air Force One.
And the end is when you hear a cackling. That's the vice president. So let's listen to that.
It was a stage villain in the ad.
I guess I should clear my mind here a little bit.
We can all see Joe Biden's weakness. If Biden wins, can he even survive till 2029? The real question is, can we? Make America Great Again, Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising.
So subtle. It's subtle.
Yeah, it's about as subtle as Trump's hairstyle. But I'll tell you, don't think of an elephant. You see Biden stumbling and appearing to be lost cognitively at the beginning, and then you see him fall down the stairs. It'll have an impact. It's grim stuff.
The question is, it aired before and after the State of the Union. Did the State of the Union help in that regard? And would, if they use him properly, can he give people a level of confidence that makes...
Right. That's the billion-dollar question. What do you think, Amy? I mean, do you think more of the Biden we saw in the State of the Union can counteract the greatest hits you're seeing paid advertising of bad Biden moments? My inclination is it will. But what do you think?
Well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think what counters it is this idea of weakness versus strength is the message that you're going to hear throughout.
That's the core of the Republican message.
So their message, weakness versus strength, and of course, Democrats then will be Trump's out for himself, I'm out for you. And where do people sort of fit? Where do those swing voters fit on which one of those is important? And I think the strength piece at a moment where we are right now, where it feels like the world is sort of out of control and nothing is really making that much sense. Nobody seems to be listening to Biden. And more important, he hasn't had a win in a long time, right? I mean, he's talking about infrastructure, rebuilding cities, climate change. All of this happened in his first year in office, first year and a half in office, or even COVID. Versus here's what I've been able to do, you know, today, or the idea of being able to show that strength. It doesn't have to be that I can sprint up the stairs or, you know, play around a golf. The strength is, and I think that's the message, is the strength of my conviction, the strength that I will be working, what I can do for you, versus the strength of doing something mostly for yourself and your donors.
I agree with almost everything you said there. I mean, the Republican message is the world's out of control. Biden's not in command. And, you know, I do, and I've said it before, you know, I'm mindful of Bill Clinton's old strong and wrong beats weak and right. And so you have to pass the bar on strength. You don't want to necessarily make that the decision-making point, but you have to pass the bar on it. And, you know, making your fight, their fight, your fight, and their fight is largely economic right now, is his mission. And by the way, it also means going after Trump relentlessly, not playing off defense, but playing offense. They did jump. Trump did an interview with CNBC yesterday, and the Biden campaign was pretty quick to jump on it on this particular comment.
Have you changed your outlook on how to handle entitlement, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Mr. President? It seems like something has to be done, or else we're going to be stuck at 120% of debt to GDP forever.
So first of all, there is a lot you can do in terms of entitlements, in terms of cutting, and in terms of also the theft and the bad management of entitlements, tremendous bad management of entitlements. There's tremendous amounts of things and numbers of things you can do. So I don't, you know, necessarily agree with the statement.
Tremendous.
They, they went after him right away. They went up with digital ads. And this is what they have to do. I mean, I think they have to stay on Trump's ass particularly around some of these economic issues that go to the well-being of, working folks who he has rallied around, largely around cultural issues and a sense, as you say, of drift, Amy, that the Republicans have exploited.
I think there's hay to make, too. You can't let him have strength for free. You can't let him have winner who delivers. Because the truth is, his career, his life has been a story of failure. His whole success gospel thing is a complete creation. And so I'd like to hear more about that. I'd like to hear about Trump the failure. Failure after failure after failure after failure. Because I think you've got to, you can't let him own that for free. And I think it's vulnerable.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, again, I think so many things have been tested. I do think that sort of populist economics versus Trump economics is the most potent. Speaking of Trump, his folks moved into the RNC like a conquering army.
Yeah, there won't be a single Xerox machine or computer that isn't go out the back door.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be like a mob blowout thing where you owe them money and they come in and just pull everything out of there. They've already done it with the legal fees.
His daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, is now the vice chair of the party, and here's what she said on being appointed to that position.
I can guarantee you that over the next 8 months, you are going to see things happen at the Republican National Committee unlike you have ever seen before, because this is a must-win election.
So I guarantee you that she's right. that a Republican National Committee run by Trump is going to do things that we've never seen before.
No, you're going to have dingbats with chainsaws running around. The data people all quit, by the way.
Chris LaCivita, who ran the Trump campaign through this to this point, is now the chief executive, Amy, of the RNC. He's not a crazy dude. He is
he's very strategic, very smart, very competent. Exactly. Who comes from this is the most competent Trump team that has been put together since he first came down the escalator in 2015. And I guess that's the question. I mean, it's for you all been on campaigns where presidential campaigns, curious your take on the role of the big committee, the RNC or the DNC. It just seems to me in this day and age that its efficacy, its importance is less critical than ever. And, you know, if it would be hard if you're the lower down on the ballot, the more you need.
It's a fundraising vehicle.
But it's not like, it's not like, oh my gosh, the RNC is not. Is in shambles. I guess Trump can't win.
Well, but there are two things that can go very wrong and very well might. One is the high dollar fundraising is in shambles. They're not raising the major dollar donors. One, because Trump is radioactive. And two, there's no faith that the building won't steal or use it all for legal fees. So the power of the money machine is diminished. Second, the Trump folks, including LaCivita, are not data wizards. And the competent people who run the master data file and a lot of the important infrastructure there have now been thrown out the window. So the things that the RNC can do well, it is likely it will do less well and it'll raise less money. Now, will that determine the outcome of the presidential race? No, but it's a material loss.
Let me suggest the counter to those two things. One is, I think that their whole objective here is to wring every last dollar they can out of the Republican National Committee for the campaign, perhaps for Trump's legal needs. Yeah. Larry Trump hasn't denied that. And, you know, it does give people a place, people who might be a little uncomfortable, big donors, gives them a place to put their money without donating directly. I think they fired a whole bunch of people, and maybe the purge was motivated by, maybe it was a loyalty purge. I think a lot of it had to do with money, and they just want the money. As to data, I actually think the Trump campaign has been pretty damn good at that. That's the one thing they have been good at is using data to slice and dice and reach their people.
Well, in the primary electorate, there to them every campaign is a Republican primary, including in the general. So I think that's an open question. The other thing is, I guarantee you the funniest finance story after the election in November will be the $4 or $5 million they're going to spend on private aircraft, hair and makeup, flying Larry Trump around to be a celebrity, because it'll be a plaything to him, and they will just raid the party to pay for that kind of ridiculous ego stuff.
Okay, let's take a break right here for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
All right, folks, watch this. Watch David Axelrod go into a trance at the mention of Helix.
No, it's you, Mike. That's what puts me in the trance. But when I do go in that trance, there's nothing better than sleeping on a Helix mattress, which I have been for over a year now. I love the Helix mattress because they actually send you a mattress that is made just for you. There are 20 unique mattresses in the Helix. Yeah, man, including the award-winning Lux Collection, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers like myself, and even a mattress made just for kids.
Which we have, and our daughter loves it.
Yeah.
We're part of the Helix movement here, led by my buddy Axelrod, who, he won't shut up about it, let's just be frank. Helix this, Helix that. But why? Why do you like it so much? It's all about the quiz, right?
It is. So you're asking, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? Well, I'll tell you, you do what I did. You take the Helix sleep quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. It's amazing. It arrives sort of rolled up in plastic. You cut it open, and it becomes this incredible, incredible thing.
See what I'm saying, folks? He's getting excited.
No, I mean, I still remember the day it arrived, and I thought, how could this be the mattress of my dreams? And it turned out that it is.
And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night, that's right, 100-night trial and a 10 to 15 year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Everybody is unique, especially Mike Murphy, and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side, as I do. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions.
They also have cooling features, which I like because my wife has a Arctic quilt. So I like having a cooling mattress. So obviously, you got to take the sleep quiz and get matched and get one of these incredible mattresses. Here's how you do it, because right now, Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/hacks and use code HELIXPARTNER2020. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Speaking about parties, Trump had one on Friday for Viktor Orban.
Yes.
That was quite the transition. That was actually an impressive transition.
Yeah, Putin didn't want to show up. He wanted a bigger ice sculpture, so they had to go with Orban.
No, but I mean, I know Orban is very popular with the Tucker Carlson wing of the Republican Party, but they're in a general election now. Does this really benefit them to be hanging with Viktor Orban, who, you know, is a Putin acolyte?
Well, they think fascism is the new Obamacare, David. You see, it's the secret. They're going to hang everything on it, and nobody's better than Orban. It's sick.
But I'm serious. It is that, but it is also, just as a strategic issue, what is the thinking there? Either of you guys, I mean, I'm trying to figure out what, or is this the analog to Biden needing credit? Does he so Jones for autocrats that he just wants to be with them?
Well, yeah, this is where I question the Trump crack machine. They're more capable people there, but this is Trump scratching an itch. And ultimately, the tougher the campaign gets, the more Trump will ignore these folks. He doesn't give a damn what La Civita thinks of his own instinct, is I got to do something else. So yeah. This is Trump driven.
Yeah.
Everything in Trump world is ultimately Trump.
That's exactly right. That to me is the $1 million question, right? Is when the spotlight comes on, when the pressure comes on, when the campaign is on, he's doing the things that are only pushing away those winnable voters, those swing voters. Now, look, do I think a bunch of people are sitting around right now going, you know what? Yeah, the cost of my rent went up, but I really want to talk about Viktor Orban.
No, that's
not
true.
But it does lead to the bigger question of is, you know, where is he getting his information and who is he speaking to? And yes, everybody in Tucker world in that echo chamber, that is somebody now that is part of our team. If you're part of our team, then I will make you, you know, do whatever you need to be happy. But the team isn't his worry, that it's expanding beyond that core team.
You know, I'm sure for La Civita and Susie Wiles and the people who have been running the campaign, there's always a fear that the back door swings open and the bar scene from Star Wars rolls in and they start doing stuff like this. President Trump, by the way, and people don't like it when you, but Trump, but he was president, could be again. He promised overnight that if he is, that among his first day actions will be to pardon the January 6th hostages.
Right, right.
Right. Patriots all.
I don't think that plays that well in a general election either.
I don't think so.
So, you know, to your point, Amy and Mike, I think that this is going to be a slugfest from start to finish. I can't tell you how it's going to end, but I do think this. I think as people do focus on Trump, that it's not necessary. It's not going to help him. He's getting all the upside and none of the downside of, you know, his sort of craziness.
You know, I want to believe that, and I do as a voter, but I'm just haunted by 1980 with Carter. Well, nobody's going to vote for a crazy movie actor. They wanted to fire Carter, and they did. And they want to fire Biden. So for all the focus on Trump, which I agree with, they got to fix Biden at least somewhat.
Yeah.
And Biden's got to fix Biden. And I see green shoots from the State of the Union. So I'm kind of feeling a little better about that. But I don't know if Trump alone will be enough unless Biden can do himself some good.
All I'm saying is I don't think because of the primary campaign and because people actually have lives to live that they've been focused very much on the actual race.
And that's true. The Trump clown show will grow and it'll be more in the center frame. That's a good point.
But I will say this. The grip he has on the Republican Party right now is really something to behold. And one guy who's harnessed it really well is Steve Daines, the head of the Republican Senate committee, who has become a Trump whisperer. It also makes me wonder, does he have a play here on leadership stuff? But he is a Trump whisperer, and he has gotten Trump to endorse, rather than 2022 when Trump endorsed all these
cranks.
Right. Cranks is a good word. And ended up saddling the Republican Party with losing candidates. Daines has gotten them to endorse candidates they think can win. And it happened again in Michigan this week.
Right. Rogers.
Yeah. Yep. Rogers gets endorsed. Longtime Republican congressman, former chair of the House Homeland Security Committee, former FBI agent. Now, you know, the problem for all of these candidates is once Trump gives, Trump takes. And it becomes harder to separate yourself out from him. I mean, Rogers is out there who was a hawk in the House, is having to endorse Trump's thinking on NATO and, you know.
No, if you followed Mike Rogers, he's right there at the Katie Britt booth, you know, cashing in what used to be a pretty respectable set of beliefs.
And so is this person. This was something. We got to get to the mail, but before we do, I just have to play some of this tape from the weekend when Nancy Mace, the congresswoman from South Carolina, who, by the way, after January 6th, she attacked Trump for putting all our lives at risk and said he had no future in the GOP. Here she is with George Stephanopoulos in what was a pretty remarkable exchange.
And you've endorsed Donald Trump for president. Mm-hmm. Judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16. And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George. And I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about Donald
Trump. No, you
are
shaming me.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting.
So, Amy, I mean, where to begin?
Yeah. Funhouse mirror.
Well, we're at the time now where as long as you are the enemy of my enemy is my friend sort of situation, and as long as you are seen as being on the right side of you're on the right team, you're in the right tribe. These sorts of things then become less important to voters.
But, you know, here's Nancy Mace, who's made who's she was a rape victim. And she has made that a central part of her story and her politics. And I'm not criticizing that at all. I think it's important for these issues to be out front and confronted. But she dismisses this judgment because she says it was a civil case and not a criminal case. It wasn't a criminal case because, like her, the woman who was assaulted, waited for a long time to go public with it because perhaps she felt shamed. And it's just like, it was so, but this is what Trump demands. And what you have, all you have to surrender to be part of it is your dignity and integrity.
And, you know, for Mace is also in a unique category of her own, where, you know, she has been all over the map for the last, what has this been, four years or so since she's been in Congress. She seems to, more than anything, enjoy being in the limelight. And there's, whether it's making statements against Trump, as she did early on after the January 6th, events, or whether it's now defending him. So, you know, some of this is, there are people, you know, Nancy Mace, I think, is in her own unique category because of who she is and what she's been willing to do. But to your point, I take your point, David, that if you are going to be on the ballot in 2024 as a Republican, you cannot distance yourself from Trump. The ones who tried to do it in 2016 all failed. The ones who tried to do it in 2020 failed. You can either get on board or get off the ballot. But this is the Trump party is your party.
Yeah.
No, he's the presidential nominee. That'll define things.
That's why Murphy's sitting here with us.
It is a thin gruel, and she believes in absolutely nothing.
Well, she also, like many of them, fear primaries, and that's when she, I mean, he reeled her in pretty quick after she...
Oh, it was incredible. She did a bit. Anyway, she is the atomic clock of not believing in anything.
Okay, then, let's take a break right here, and we'll be right back.
If you have, for us, The Hacks, a question, you can email us at hacksontap@gmail.com, hacksontap@gmail.com, or you can get all 20th century on us and leave us a voicemail at our cool number that nobody can remember. What is that number?
773-389-4471. I'll repeat it because who can remember that? 773-389-4471.
And we ought to thank the Hacks on Tap AI unit for that depiction of your voice giving the
good,
phone.
Huh?
It's uncanny.
Yeah,
it sounded just like you.
When you leave that message for us, by the way, remember, leave your name so we can make fun of you. And second, no speeches. We do the bloviating around here. So please keep it to about 20, 25 seconds. And if it's a great question and we have time, we'll play it on the air and we'll even try to answer it. Our first question from Omar, and this is going to go to Amy.
Hi guys, this is Omar from Chicago. The battleground states that they're focusing on this time. Last time it was North Carolina, it was Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Georgia. Is that list pretty much going to be the same this time around? Should Democrats or the Republicans be focusing on any other pickups? Should they be slicing any states from that list? Thanks so much. I'm a huge fan.
Omar, thank you for the question. You know, like any good sequel, this has not just the same main characters, but it also has the same background. And what we know right now is that those, yes, indeed, those same six states that were determinative of the 2016 election and the 2020 election are going to be at the center of the battleground map this time around. So I put in Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Now, North Carolina, I put on the a little bit on the outside of that, but of those six states, every single one of them has been decided by 3 points or less for these last two elections. And our friend Ron Brownstein has another good stat when looking at the Electoral College. But since 2008, so the last four presidential elections, all but 10 states have gone the same way in every single presidential election. We've never seen that before in sort of modern history. So look, yes, you say, if you're Democrats, you go, look, we got to expand this map a little bit. Let's do North Carolina. Okay. If you're Republicans, they say maybe New Hampshire. I still think New Hampshire
or Minnesota. That's
one.
The other Republican dream.
They do.
That
I know. They
happens.
Always like to do Minnesota. Yeah.
You mentioned a state, though, that I think is going to be really, really tough this year, which is Nevada. You know, I think you speak to anybody in the Democratic Party and they're concerned about Nevada. Large number of Hispanic voters who went 2/3 for Biden last time are running about even at best right now. That state is a concern, and they feel better about North Carolina than they do about Georgia, and partly because of the governor's race last week in Super Tuesday. You now have a race between a kind of center-left, normal lieutenant governor versus attorney general who's running for governor, Josh Stein, versus Mark Robinson, the lieutenant governor, who is very much like in the in the image of the kind of Trumpy candidate who lost in 2022, very extreme on issues like choice, lots of anti-Semitic comments in his background. Stein, the other candidate, is Jewish. They feel that's going to create a lot of ferment at the grassroots that will help Biden in a state that's been close. Obama carried it. States that have been close in the last few cycles.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you look at the makeup of those two states, Nevada and North Carolina, those were the kinds of states that Obama put on the board in 2008 and 2012, in part because of this theory that the growing American electorate, right, younger voters, especially younger voters of color, were the future of the Democratic Party. Republicans could never win them over. And Georgia got onto the map most recently because of how energized and the Black vote was during the 2020 election, and even going into 2022 for Warnock, who's obviously not on the ballot. And the infrastructure there, that was the Stacey Abrams machine, doesn't seem to be running on all cylinders this time around.
Not sure
around.
It ever did.
Yeah.
One of the great overrated things.
No,
in
it did. It produced.
It did.
Produced
it turned out votes. Yeah. But can you win North Carolina? Let me ask you this, David. If Biden is struggling with African-American voters, especially younger African-American voters, enough so that he can't win Georgia, how does he win North Carolina?
First of all, you have to correct that problem. I mean, if he's giving up 20 to 25% of the African-American vote, as he is in polling right now, this is maybe an academic discussion and not just about North Carolina. So
yeah,
that you have to find ways to address that problem. But you do also have these booming sort of college towns and suburban areas there, and that has made the state more attractive. It helped Obama, but yes, you identify the right problem. We got to keep moving.
All right, just quickly, I can't resist tagging one thing though: Michigan and Georgia, also by far the biggest states for EV investment and manufacturing jobs. If Biden can turn that into a plus, it'll make a huge deal there. And Michigan is the state more than any other I'm watching. There's so many things going on.
Do we have
there.
To call this an ad, though? I mean,
well, no, we did the Nevada governor's ad, so I thought I'd come over and do this one.
Here's my final word on this. I think that we're going back to the future and that Biden needs Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
Yep, that's what I think,
and I think the thing that's going for him there He's trailing in all those states now. The thing that's going for him there, he's got three very Democratic governors, three party organizations that are on the upswing. Wisconsin's is the best in the country. Whitmer has a great organization. Shapiro is very savvy. But that's going to be, to me, where the main battles are going to be won. He'll still need, even if he wins those states, one more electoral vote. Could get it out of Nebraska, too, because they split their electoral votes. But those states are the ones to watch. Hey, Murphy, a guy named Marty is just champing at the bit to ask you a question.
Hey, Haps, Martin from Los Angeles. My question is, seeing as these exit polls show that around 30% of Haley voters say they won't vote for Trump, and the general election polls have Trump up, is it possible that most of these guys are pulling the lever on the polls, the general election polls, for a third-party candidate? Thanks in advance. Love the show.
Oh, thank you, Marty. Thanks for listening. Well, so the exit polls on the Haley thing are misleading a little, because those Haley voters are not all Republicans. People are kind of like, they're all Republicans. They're not going to vote for Trump. It's done. There are a lot of anti-Trump independents and some Democrats who crossed over to vote for Haley to have the joy of voting against Trump a little early. So you got to be careful. There is a segment of the Republican Party that is hostile to Trump. The question is, how big is it really? And is it material? And in the end, particularly when Biden's done trying to raise taxes with his budget, will they hold their nose and go to Trump? Will they hold their nose and go to Biden? Or, to your point, where they go waste their vote in one of these ridiculous third-party things, which is a nightmare for Biden, because Biden needs a lot of voters who can't stand him voting for him. He has to win the "I hate both these guys" election, which he did last time.
Well, and the Wall Street Journal poll that was published last Sunday had Biden leading among double doubters or double haters, whatever you want to call them, people who had an unfavorable view of both he and Trump. He was winning by 10 points among those voters.
I think the third party thing is going to have a little spike over the summer, like they often do, because everybody's disgusted and it's fun and the media will overreport it. But in the end, I think it'll melt. So it could be really catalytic, could be on the progressive left. You got Cornel West. There are a lot of loose ends there. But in the end, I think it might not be quite as big of a factor as people are speculating it could be. But that's a guess.
I'm gonna homogenize this with the last question we were gonna take from a guy named Joe, who said is it rather arrogant to dismiss the third party candidates as if voters were beholden to the Republicans and Democrats. It is fair to say, and I think you would, that there is not going to be a third party or independent president of the United States in January of 2025. So the role of these candidates will be to tip this thing one way or another.
Yep. And that is what every voter is ultimately saying by voting for a third party candidate, which is they have absolutely every right to say, I don't like either one of this. This is not a fair system. This doesn't seem to be a system that's working for people. And yet it is the system that we have. And my big question, actually, thinking through this third party, is its impact not just on the presidential, but how is it going to filter down to like the Senate races and the House races? Well, these folks, are they going to come back in? Right. They may go third party. Will they come back for a Senate race or House race? Because those things are going to be determined by equally narrow margins. But
third parties are going to have to fill out a slate, presumably, in their states. They're not going to just have a presidential candidate, but they'll have other candidates.
They may.
Some will.
Some will. Some will not. Like, is RFK going to have a slate?
Well, he's not a party. He's an independent candidate.
That's right.
So no, I don't think
like
he will.
Stein,
but they might get independent ballot lines in a few places. You know, there will be some cranks sprinkled through it all.
The No Labels Party is they're plowing ahead. They said and
don't have a candidate yet. I wonder what will finally happen with them. They keep claiming they're going to do it, but everybody says no. Maybe we should run. I think it might be time for hack leadership here.
It is. It's a unity ticket. Yeah. Look
yes.
at you two.
Yeah, that'd
right.
be nice.
Go.
Former foes, now friends. It's a great story.
We're running on the no shame ticket. That's right.
Mugwumps. We're bringing them back.
Amy Walter, my only regret is that we don't have a longer show. Because always great to have you, and we'll see you soon, and you too, Murphy.
Yeah, and check out Amy's work at Cook Political Report. Indispensable.
Thank you. Excellent. You want to know what's going on? Read Cook.
Yeah.
Political
Thank
Report
you.
With
that
Amy
was
Walter.
Such a great plug. I'm going to make one more quick plug. We have an app. We have an app now. Where you can see our ratings called In Brief. It is free. You can go to the App Store, In Brief. And I'm bringing back the podcast, so you guys need to come on to the On Years.
Oh, yeah.
We can have this conversation. I mean, I'm no Axelrod interviewer, but I'll try to get some tears.
We're like poor relations. We go wherever we're invited, so we will see you
it's
there.
It's like the old director joke. Can we get them? Only if we ask.
There we go.
All right, guys.
All right, guys.
Take care.
Everybody.
See you, David. Thanks, Amy.
Bye.